my name is Avery. You are listening to The Nancy Ruffin Show. Make sure to subscribe and leave a comment if you're new. Hope you enjoy the show.
You are now tuned in to The Nancy Ruffin Show.
Welcome back to another episode of The Nancy Ruffin Show, the podcast where we focus on three things: God, goals, and growth. I am your host, Nancy Ruffin, aka the purpose pusher and author of the award-winning book, Live on Purpose. If you have not purchased your very own copy of this book, I don't know where you've been living these past 4 years, but you need to make sure that you get yourself a copy so that you can get your whole life together. In any case, I am excited for this week's episode. I have a special treat for you all. I get to sit down with Mighty Bloom. She is the CEO and founder of The Blooming Soul. She is a young, fierce healer who is focused on really helping young women, much like herself, heal from some of the toxic, unhealthy, unproductive baggage that many of us tend to carry throughout our lives. And what I love about Mighty is that she's in her mid-20s and she's doing so much of the work that I myself didn't start doing till I was in my 30s. So she is light years ahead of me, or will be rather, when she's my age. But before we get into Mighty's interview, just want to talk a little bit about what I've been up to, about what's to come, what the rest of the year is looking like. You know that your girl has been busy because I'm always busy. My Women of Faith group is heading into its 6th week this Wednesday, which means we are halfway through. And if you have yet to join, there's still time for you to join. We still have, week 6, week 7, week 8, week 9? We still have 5 more meetings, so you can join. If you're looking for a women's circle that is going to really fill you from a spirit perspective, right? If you're looking for a place where you can explore your relationship with God. Maybe you don't even have a relationship with God right now. Maybe for whatever reason, you're angry at God, right? Maybe you feel like he's abandoned you. Maybe you feel like you can't count on him. I mean, there's many reasons why we turn away from God. And if you find yourself in that season of your life, then I encourage you, I invite you to join the group. No expectations, right? No pressure. Just join us, sit in on a meeting, listen in, and see if it's for you. You might like what you see and hear. So if you are interested, if this is you, I am going to post the link to our membership form in the show notes of this episode. All you have to do is fill out your first name, last name, and email, and that's it. I will send you an email welcoming you to the group. And then every Sunday, you will receive an email either from me or from my co-leader, Teresa, with the scripture of the week that we're going to be reading, along with some discussion questions for you to reflect on and answer. And then when we meet on Wednesday, we will read scripture as a group, and then we will discuss, the chapter. This past week, if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, there was an episode last season that I did called Answer the Call. And in this episode, it was really about helping you to challenge yourself to do those things that you're being called to do, but maybe you're a little bit afraid, right? Maybe you're doubting yourself. Maybe you're struggling with imposter syndrome. And because we tend to be our own worst enemy, we talk ourselves out of things that we really want to do because either we don't feel prepared enough, we don't feel qualified, we think that we're going to fail, all the many number of reasons and excuses that we give ourselves to not do something. And so this week, it was really great because one of the women in my Bible study cohort, I called upon her to lead the week's opening prayer because my co-leader, who usually does it, was unable to. She couldn't join the meeting this week. And so I had asked Eileen if she would do it. And, you know, when she initially got back to me and she said that her initial response or her initial reaction was no. Like, that was exactly like what her spirit was telling her. Like, hell nah. Like, I can't do this. But then after she sat with it for some time and she really allowed God to speak to her, she said that she felt moved and inspired and even called, you know, to step up in this way and to lead the prayer. And I will tell you that she was phenomenal. Her opening prayer really left all of us with like goosebumps. Some of us like had tears in our eyes because it was just that powerful. And I share that because so often we get in our own way, even though we're prepared, even though we're qualified, there's still something inside of us that leads us to believe that we can't do something. But I tell you that when you know that you've been called to something, you have to push past the voice that's telling you you can't do it. Because if you get to push past that voice, chances are that the experience you're going to have is going to be so far beyond anything that you've ever dreamed or experienced, and it's going to be worth it. And it's going to be the very thing that God is going to use to propel you and to push you into your purpose. But so often we resist. We resist the call, we push against it, we talk ourselves out of it, we doubt ourselves. Even when God is telling us to move, we want to go against what he's saying. And I say that even in relation to myself, because this past week, I also was called upon to do something, to step out of my comfort zone, and I was so scared to do it. I have a friend who recently lost her husband to a terminal cancer, and she had asked if I would do her the honor to pray at the viewing services, you know. And my first initial reaction was like, there's no way. Like, I am not qualified to pray over no one's funeral services. I am not a priest. I am not a pastor. Like, what do I know about praying at a funeral service? Right. And this is me getting in my own head, because to be honest, I pray every single week in my Bible study group. I lead the closing prayer. I pray every single day over my women of faith sisters. I pray every single day over my children and my husband before I leave to work in the morning. Like, I pray. If there's one thing I know how to do is pray. And yet I was getting in my own head trying to convince myself that I could not do this thing that God was calling me to do. He was speaking to my friend, using her as the vessel to help push me and propel me into what might be the next step in my calling, in my ministry. I don't know what it is, but I do know that the more I see God, the more I'm in my Bible, the more I'm leading these women in my Women of Faith group, the more God is calling me to minister. And there's a part of me that doesn't feel equipped. There's that voice in my head that says, who do you think you are to possibly think you could even do something like this? And I'm trying to battle that voice in my head, to silence that voice in my head, right? And I do that by making sure that I'm always prepared. When you are prepared and when you step into a room with confidence, like, there's, of course you're going to be great. There's no way you can fail when you're prepared for the assignment. And this is what's so important for me to remember, for you to remember. For whenever we feel like we're being called to something, when we feel like we're being challenged to step out of our comfort zone and to do something that scares us, and the voice in your head tells you that you can't, You have to respond with, yes, I can. And you keep repeating that mantra to yourself until you start to believe it. But not only repeat it, you got to make sure that you're not prepared. You got to make sure that you're preparing for the assignment that you're being called to. You don't want to show up to something unprepared, because then you're not honoring the call. You're not honoring what you're being called to do. Create the mindset that will develop the belief that you can do it. Make sure that you prepare, and then you put on the confidence of God, and you step into every single room knowing that you can step up and step into the calling that God has for you. Let this new season of your life be the season that you affirm who you are, that you step into your purpose, that you stop doubting yourself, that you start listening to where God is calling you, that you pay attention to the people He is putting in your path to propel you into your purpose, and then you move ahead. You go forth knowing that you are equipped, because like I like to say, God doesn't call the qualified. God qualifies the call. And when God calls you to it, honey, God is going to get you through it. And so with that, I'm going to take a little break. And when we come back, we are going to get into my interview with Mighty Bloom.
My name is Avery Ruffin, and you're listening to The Nancy Ruffin Show.
Oh my God, but it was so good to see you last night.
Absolutely beautiful.
So how did you feel bartending the event for Vecina Couture?
It was wonderful. So it was my first time ever in that community. So we do have some similar people who also are part of the Blooming Soul family. But it was my first time seeing something Ada creates. You know, I've known about her through Rosa and through Raygrid, who I kind of just trust what they say on people. And I had fallen in love with who she seems to be online, but I never had the pleasure of knowing her in person. So it was very warming to see that it's the same person on the screen and off the screen. She's so humble and so beautiful. Like I love to call people beautiful when I feel them on the inside, because it just feels so good. Like I just want to hug you. Like,
yes. Yeah. And you know, that's I absolutely love the impact that social media has had in connecting people. Like I say it all the time, if you use social media the right way to actually connect and build a community, it can be the precipice for some really beautiful relationships. And I know that you know this.
Yeah.
And for me, so many of like my friends now I met like on social media, you know. But this is why, you know, for whoever's listening right now or watching, be intentional about cultivating those relationships. Like if you connect with someone on social media, there's a reason you were attracted to that person. There's a reason you clicked the follow button, whatever that reason was, but don't let it stop at like there. When you have an opportunity to connect with these people in real life, make sure you're in the room, right? Because it's like you said, Mighty, you feel a different energy when you can feel the person's spirit mm-hmm. in person. And when you can see that who they are online is exactly who they are in person.
Yes, it's very refreshing. And I always like tell people, you have to pay a price to get to the life that you want, right? So sometimes it's paying the price to go to these events. Sometimes it's paying the price to attend a workshop or to get a coach or to have a mentorship. Like there's always a price to pay, and we're either adding value to our life because we're investing in it, or we're diminishing stuff and still paying for it. So it's really up to you where you want to put your money and your attention and what you want to get back from that. Like I was originally attending the event. So Rosa had invited me to attend the event. I changed the flight, actually. I was supposed to be in Florida already. And I changed my flight to be able to attend the event. Because I wanted to meet Ada. I'm like, I've been admiring her work for about a year, so I want to meet her in person. And then last minute, Rosa calls me and tells me, hey, do you want to work? Like, I know you wanted to attend, but do you want to work? You can make some money. And I was like, yeah, sure. First of all, I love being on the back end of things, so I'm always happy to work. But that would have never happened if I hadn't 2 years ago invested in a 5 a.m. group where I was paying a monthly membership, where I met Rosa, and then I built a relationship with Rosa, and then I got on that invitation list, and then Rosa gave me a position to work. Like, you have to look at the bigger picture in your investments, right? People are investments, and I don't say that in the, oh, if you don't have anything for me, then I don't want to, you know, deal with you type of thing, but you should have things for me and I should have things for you. Like, that could be a listening ear. That could be an opportunity. That could be some advice. That could be me recommending a book. Like, there should be some sort of value being exchanged.
Yes.
And you're going to see it like worthwhile in the future. If you keep those connections. And I have been very blessed to see my community bless me and me bless them in exchange.
You are so wise for your age. And every time I see you, I say the same thing because I'm so impressed by the wisdom of a, you know, mid 20 year old. Like, when I was in my mid 20s, girl, I was a hot ghetto mess. Okay. Mess. And to see a young woman like yourself, just so self-aware, so self-aligned with who you are, and then who you also want to become. You're so intentional about everything you do. It's like, how can we clone Mighty so that we can have, you know, just an entire generation of young women like you? And we got into this conversation without fully introducing you. And I think that happens because we know each other, like there's a different comfort level. So the conversation is easier, but I do want to introduce you to the audience. As a matter of fact, I'm going to let you do the introduction because I feel like no one can ever introduce us better than we can introduce ourselves. So welcome to my show, the Nancy Ruffin Show podcast, Miss Mighty Bloom. Tell us a little bit about who you are. Who is Mighty?
Thank you so much for having me, Nancy. It's really an honor. Well, my name is Jo Mighty. I go by Mighty Bloom on the internet streets. I'm 26 years young. I am the founder, creator, male person. I'm the everything for Blooming Soul. Which is a community of people looking to live up to their full potential. So I've never put the business in a box because it's so much, you know. I create products. So my main product are candles with inspirational messages on them. Right now, actually, they're starting to come with these little affirmation cards that you get to like place next to your candle so that you can look at when you're lighting them. But I do events as well. I do events such as workshops like vision board events, but I also do social events so that people can meet people in the same mindset as them. I think too many times while I was growing up, I kept hearing like, no new friends, you know, you have to have the same circle and this and that. It's like, no, I like meeting new people. As I evolve, I like meeting people that are interested in those type of things too. And I have my old friends and I love my old friends, but I tell everyone, you know, that I come around, people are meant for a certain area of your life.
Yeah.
Some people are meant for all the areas of your life, but yeah. Other people, you know, some friends you go out to party with, some friends, you know, you could try new restaurants with, then you have the friend that you call when you cry. Then you have like, you got to know where to place people, one, to avoid disappointment, and two, to fully align yourself with what you're looking to achieve in your life. So that's what I try to do with Blooming Soul. Just align people in the same space and bring them opportunities, books, events, just everything.
When did Blooming Soul like become a real thing for you? Like, when did you say, you know what, this is what I want to do, or this is what my community needs. Because we often create things out of a need, right? We recognize that there's something missing, and then we look at ourselves and we say, well, how can I provide this? Like, when did you know that it was your time to do that?
Okay, so the company started by just being a candle company. So I was coming out of a weird funk depression in my life, and my partner at the time gifted me the start of the business. So he gave me money for me to start learning how to make candles and start selling them. And I've always had a love for writing and, excuse me, getting myself through that depression. I created this 30-day self-love challenge for me to do. And I shared it with one of my friends. She was like, what? This is amazing. Like, you got to give it to other people too. I was like, really? All right, cool. I'll put it online. And I put it on Instagram, and I was like, you know, sign up, whatever. I'll email you every day what the challenges are. It was a task every single day. So we went on a 4-stage challenge where it was like acknowledgement, detoxing, adding value, and then celebrating your life. So every single day I emailed people some inspirational stuff and then a certain task or a certain journal prompt for them to complete. And 500 people signed up in a matter of a week. I was like, well, I don't even engage with this much people. At that point, my Instagram was just like cute. Like there was nothing happening in it. I was partying and making candles. And when 500 people signed up and they were consistently like doing the work and emailing me back and thanking me, one girl, her name is Rochelle, actually, she's a friend of mine. She said, Mighty, you should do an event because I feel that people want to meet each other, like the people who are doing the challenge. I was like, okay, cool. I'll do an event. I spoke to Rosa. In a week, I got sponsors for the event. I sold about 30 tickets for the event. And, you know, I just put it all together. Putting events is not a piece of cake. It is not a piece of cake. Especially when I don't know what I'm doing. Like, yeah. Yeah, cool. I just want to have an event.
But see, that's the difference between people who do things and people who just talk about doing things, right? We don't let the not knowing stop us. It's like, all right, I don't know how to do this, but fuck it. You know,
I'll figure it out. I'm gonna do something. And from there, so after that event, the event was a total success. I didn't make any money, but I also didn't come out of pocket in any money. So I was so happy. I was like, yes, this is perfect. Everybody enjoyed themselves. My pockets are fine. And everyone's like, oh, we're gonna have another one. I was like, yeah, I'll do another one. Don't worry. But I wasn't gonna do another one. Like, I was like, okay, this was cool. I'm done. Back to making candles. And people started pressing me. Like, you said you was gonna do another event. What happened to your other event?
What they want, girl. You get like, them used to something, and it's like, yeah. Okay.
So that was it. So it was 2 years ago on March 3rd, I believe, was the event. I would say the week following that event is when I started to notice, like, okay, I have something here, like something people want, like I could do something with this. And I think throughout the 2 years, what has really sat with me is that a lot of girls come to my events and they either tell me beforehand or end up telling me after, like, wow, I really enjoyed myself. It wasn't just for Instagram. Like there's this thing in my generation where people do things just for show, like so that you can take a pretty picture. And
it's not just your generation. It's my generation too. And I discovered that, again, you start to see it, especially in the work that we do that is focused on healing work, and we're providing people with the tools, right? And when you have workshops, you know, there's always like a handful that come and they actually do the work. Then there's another like population of people that just want to be there so they can take the picture, so they can say, oh, I was here, I was with so-and-so. And those be the same ones you'll see in every event, but their life still be a hot mess because they're focused on just making it look good for the gram instead of really doing the work for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Or seeing people like, who are so friendly online, and then you can't even talk to in person. My thing is, whoever has gone to my events know you're going to talk to other people. Like, I make it very clear before you purchase your ticket, and I make it very clear when we enter the room, because I see it as you left your house for a reason. And it is my responsibility, now that I have you in this space that I created, to make sure that reason is executed. Yes. And if you didn't want to socialize with other people, stay in your house. Yes. So I'm gonna figure out a way for you to meet other people. I've had people form romantic relationships in my events. I've had people form business relationships. I've had people become best friends in my events. So it's like, I feel good. I feel like I'm connecting people, and we're here to connect with other people. Like, there's no greater gift. Everything else can be created through that. Like, again, love, work, fun, whatever. So Blooming Soul has really been a blessing to my life, because it's also a reflection of my life. I don't do anything with Blooming Soul that I don't practice myself. Like,
but that's also why I feel like people connect with you so much, and it resonates, because you do practice what you preach, because there's a certain level of authenticity there. And right. And that's what we know people connect with most. And it's kind of like you said that online, you know, there might be people who are super friendly and super social, but then when they get in the room, right, like, they retreat into themselves. They don't know how to connect. And then it makes you wonder, well, then, like, who are you really? Like, is this you, or is this you, you know, online? And when you don't know, it affects the level of trust that you have with that person, right? So, for example, if they try to execute something, maybe an event, or try to sell a product, it might make you think twice, because it's like, well, how can I trust who you are? How can I trust the product that you're selling if I don't know who you really are, because you're showing two different sides of you.
Yeah.
Right. And like, for you, you are who you are. Like, who you are online is who you are in person. And you have this energy that just lights up every space.
Thank you.
You enter, and you have a way of pulling people close to you. And I think that that's a gift, because not too many people have that.
Thank you. It's so funny, because I grew up like in middle school and high school with, can I curse?
Yeah, girl, be yourself. That's beautiful. We're not here to censor anyone.
I grew up being called like that. I had a bitch face all the time. And I do have a very serious face. But I am a very loving, connection building person. So it's funny to me when people have said that to me, like, oh no, you look like a bitch. And I'm like, well, if only you knew, like, I'm really a softie. Like, I really love all the, you know, like, don't play with me. I can be a bitch, but you really don't know what's behind someone's face, or what they're thinking about, or what they're capable of creating. Like, don't ever count anyone out by what they appear to be the first time you encounter them. It's the world is about us discovering each other, ourselves.
You mentioned being in high school, growing up. So, and I want to talk a little bit about your background, because we know that how we're raised, our family dynamics, like, all of that influences like who we become, right? Where were you born and raised?
I was born in the Bronx. I was born in, let me fix that before people come for me. I was born in a Bronx hospital, but my family resided in Harlem. Okay. But we didn't stay there more than a month. Like, we left to Dominican Republic a month after I was born, and I lasted about a year there. Then I came back into the States and lived in the Bronx. Okay. Then from there, we moved to Maryland. Then we went back to DR. Then we lived in Venezuela for some.
Oh my goodness.
Like I come from a very street life family background. So I had to move a lot as I was growing up. I've been so a little.
How has that, I guess, how has those experiences shaped you, right? Like constantly moving and being able to experience different cultures, right? Because we know living in the DR is different than living in the States. I have no idea what living in Venezuela is like, but I would imagine, again, you know, it's a different country, different culture. So how did those experiences, I guess, shape your own worldview, like, you know, about the world at large, and then also about yourself and the kind of person you want to be?
So I'm blessed enough that I always grew up having more than I ever needed, no matter in what place of the world I was living. And unlike, I hear a lot of people complain that they moved around a lot. I think it made me fall in love with traveling. Like, I have a thing for traveling now that every month or every couple of months, I'm on a plane going somewhere. This year alone, I've traveled way more than I've ever traveled in my life. From March to July, I went every month to Mexico. Then I went to DR. Now I'm going to Florida. Then I'm going to PR. Like, I like to move around. I don't like to stay in one place for too long. I'm cool with moving from place to place. And I think that's thanks to the growing up that I did. Because for other reasons, we always had to move around during my childhood. Living in DR, comparing it to living here, it was definitely an adjustment because I came from being one of the wealthiest people where we lived in Dominican Republic and having, you know, a cook, a cleaning person, a driver, just everything, like everything. So now we moved to New York. And so I have consistently 16 years now living in New York after we left DR. And we came to New York, just my mom and I, and now my mom had to like get a job for someone else, and like we had to be on a budget, and oh, we don't have a car, we don't have anyone that cooks and cleans for us anymore. Like, okay,
I would see yeah how that's a huge adjustment.
This is different. Like, I used to get home from school and be like, hey, can you please make me this? Like, yeah, girl, I mean, now it's like I get home from school and my mom's at work and I gotta figure out what am I, like, I was 9 years old, my mom is at work, I'm getting home from like fifth grade, I gotta figure out like what can I make to eat before my mom gets home. So it was definitely an adjustment, but I never, you know, I think my parents did a great, and my family did a great job raising me, because I never saw it as a downfall. Like, it was always like, okay, shit is different now. Like, we ain't in DR no more. Like, this is a different life I got to get to know here. And my parents were always very hardworking. They had different businesses. My mom would help my dad run all the businesses. So that was always within me. Like, do your own stuff.
Yeah,
so always create your own stuff.
You've had that entrepreneurial spirit in you always, because that was how you were raised, right? Mm-hmm. That is the influence that you got. And I would also imagine that some of those experiences really contributed to like how strong you are, and this this I can do it no matter what mentality. Oh, right?
People like, you know, I love the compliments that I'm so wise and I'm so mature and all this, but like, I've really lived a lot of lives that people don't know about. Like, it's really been a lot of growing into. Like, I feel like I've been so many different people.
Change any of that? Like, if you could go back and, you know, instead of having all the movement, like maybe if you had a choice to have had a little bit more stability, would you choose that, or would you choose the life that you have lived so far?
You know, it's tricky, because the only reason I would want to change it is so my dad would still be here. Mm-hmm. So my dad was murdered 16 years ago because of the street life. Mm-hmm. And that is the only reason I would go back and say, can this all be different so that he didn't end up like that? But because that was the life my dad chose, I have grown into the woman that I am today. Like, I know that I'm not, well, God, I know, never say never, but it is never my intention to be with a man from the street, because I already know what that is like firsthand. Like, my dad was one of the greatest people in the world. There's people that still come up to me and admire who my dad was, and it's a blessing to be his daughter. He was always taking care of everyone and being there for everyone, but he did some shit that got him to where it got him. So I don't want to deal with that in my life. And if I hadn't lived it firsthand like that, I would have thought like, okay, being with a street dude is cool. They got money, or we could do this. So thankfully I lived that. It pushed me. It warned me. It taught me a lot. So I wouldn't change it. But I wish it would have gone just a little different, so that wouldn't have been, or that he would have learned his lesson sooner, so that wouldn't have been his ending.
Were you ever angry with your dad because of that? Like, you know, as children, especially, you were, what, maybe 10 years old when he was murdered?
I was 9 years old when he was murdered.
So like nine, that's my daughter's age, my oldest daughter. And when I see how like her father is her world, and I imagine you were the same way with yours, you know, like.
I was daddy. My dad had a lot of kids and I was like, I was his favorite.
So she's a daddy's girl. And I think about like, wow, if that were to ever happen, her whole world would be devastated, as I'm sure yours was. So was there ever like any time as you were growing up that you were like angry, you know, because of either the life he chose or because of the way his life ended? What was your process for working through some of those emotions?
All right. So I've actually never shared this outside of my best friends. But I was so angry before my dad died that I didn't have time to be angry after he died. So right before he died, I wasn't speaking to him because we had found out that my mom and I had moved to New York because they were broken up or on a break. I don't know. I don't understand that. That was their business. And we had found out that he started another family in DR. So I'm a 9-year-old, not really understanding why we moved here. I find out my dad has another family, and I didn't want to speak to him. Mm. And I was like, you know, I don't care about you, blah, blah, close the door. I have I call her my second mom, who's actually my dad's sister, who helped raise me all that time that we were moving around and my mom was handling business stuff. And she told me, like, you're not going to stop speaking to your dad about something that has nothing to do with you. Like, right. I understand that it has affected you, but your dad didn't do this to you. Right. So we're going to have to fix this relationship. And thank God that my aunt had the courage to do that and get me to speak to him, because I don't think a month went by after we made up that he got killed.
Wow.
So there was no time. There was no time to be mad. I have been so mad. And again, like, my dad chose the street life as a job, but my dad was such a beautiful person in his everyday life. Like, my dad would never seen him be a violent person. Always taking care of. There would be people who showed up at my grandma's house in DR. We would not even be there. Like, señora, ¿le puede decir a Mario que necesito dinero para la receta? Like,
wow.
Just people looking for him to take care of them. That it made me fall in love with the person my dad was to everyone else. So there was just a lot of admiration when he passed away, wishing that I would have gotten more time and gotten to know him on a like personal level.
Yeah.
Because he was my dad.
Not just him being your dad, but really getting to know him as a man, as a person.
Yeah, like I want to know this man everybody talks about and everybody comes up to me about. But yeah, I've never been angry at him for that. I was angry that he had another family. like, why you did that? But I was never angry about the life he chose. The life he chose provided for everything. It provided the me moving around and getting to know the world. It provided the luxuries we had. It provided the health that we got. You know, some people just don't know a better way to live their life, and they end up making these choices. And because he did that, I now know a better way to live my life. So yeah. I'm grateful for it.
And that is, you know, when we hear the term like generational curses, right? And how often, and that's just one example, because there's so many different toxic things that get passed on, you know, from generation to generation. But being able to have that awareness and say, I don't have to continue this moving forward. Like, I can choose a different life. And you are someone who focuses a lot on personal development. Like, it's who I think, like, it's what your brand is about. It's all that you speak about. When did you know, or when did you start doing personal development work? And when did you know that you needed to start doing it?
So I always mix up years. So
it doesn't
be wrong. It might be 2018 or 2019. One of those two. I had asked my aunt, who's my mom's sister, for $2,000. I really can't remember for what. I think I was paying off a debt or something. And my aunt has always been like the rich aunt. She always got money. So I'm like, yeah, can I borrow this? And she was like, yeah, I'll let you borrow it, but you got to go to some workshop there this weekend and it's already paid for. And I was like, oh yeah, sure, it's whatever, like I'll go. She's like, but it's a 3-day workshop. I was like, no, Sunday I have a photo shoot, so I can't go on Sunday. She's like, oh yeah, just go on Friday and tell them that you can't go Sunday, they'll understand. I was like, all right. So I showed up to this workshop. They start talking, first of all, it's in Spanish. And at that point in my life, I was not into talking Spanish. Like, I would talk Spanish at home, but I wasn't practicing any cultural Hispanic things outside of my family. So I was uncomfortable there, because thinking 3 days, I'm going to be in here just talking Spanish for 3 whole days with people I don't know. What the heck is this? Just because I need $2,000, whatever. I go on Friday, and during the first break, I'm like, oh, like, to the trainer, I'm like, I can't really stay here all this time, because they're talking about you got to show up at 10 in the morning. You're not getting out till 10 o'clock at night.
Girl, what? Damn.
And I'm like, how old am I at that time? I had to be like 20 years old, I think. Mm-hmm. I don't know, around there. And I'm like, I can't be here on Sunday. And my aunt said, you guys would understand. And the guy's like, oh, no, we don't understand. You either come all 3 days or you leave now. And I was like, oh, but if I leave now, I don't get the $2,000. And that's all I, like, that's the whole reason I'm here. So I call my aunt. I'm like, Tia, they're not going to let me out. I can't stay here. Like, I have a photo shoot on Sunday. She's like, oh, okay, that's cool. Don't stay. But I can't give you $2,000 if you don't stay. It's like, what kind of trick shit is this? Like, so I call, I cancel my photo shoot. I'm like, fuck it, I'm going to be here all 3 days. Might as well make something out of it. And it was it's called Vive. It's this company that comes from DR. And it's just a lot of transformational work during those 3 days. Like, a lot of digging into your life and admitting, forgiving, confessing, just kind of opening your eyes and seeing different perspectives. I had to be one of the youngest people in that room. And I was letting out a lot of trauma that I went through in my childhood that I didn't see as trauma. Like, because I wasn't ever, I had this conception that trauma had to be something like being physically abused. Or so I was like, no, I'm fine. I've had a great childhood. My mom loves me. My dad loves me. You know, I'm good. I had this disguise that if it wasn't as painful as other people's traumas, then it wasn't really trauma. I was complaining, right? So I started to discover in these 3 days how much lighter I felt when I was admitting that this hurt me. I don't like how this felt. I've been carrying it for so many years. Da, 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 da. Like certain ways of punishment that my mom would do when I was younger. I was carrying that. Oh my God. I remember I was like 8 years old and I don't know what the heck I did, but my mom stopped talking to me for like 2 days, which moms out there, do not do that to your children. I mean, like, I don't have kids, but from a personal experience, that is one of the worst forms of punishment. And I think my mom didn't know any better at the time because we have such a beautiful relationship now. I don't think she ever intentionally meant to hurt me. She was probably frustrated herself and like didn't know how to deal with it. But I carried that from like 8 years old till 20 years old in this program.
Wow.
And I didn't remember. It was like during an activity they were doing, they were kind of pressing me to kind of yell out everything that you're carrying that's hurting. And I yelled that out and I was like, what? Like, what did I just say?
Yeah.
I didn't remember that had happened. So it was there that I started to notice like, yo, I've been through a lot of shit. Like I'm 20 years old and I've lived a lot of freaking lives during this whole world tour that we've been on. And I liked it. I was like, I like how I'm feeling after this. Like every day, even though the days were exhausting, because again, it was from like 10 in the morning to 10 at night with very little breaks for you to eat. I kept feeling lighter and lighter and like a different person every time we would come out of that room. And it was there that I learned, like, you got to invest to be the person you're looking to be. Mm. Like, life is not going to sprinkle you, you know, some fairy dust and, oh, you know, you're magical now. You're healed now. It's all good now. You got to do something about it for you to get to where you're looking to go. That program I ended up finding out cost like $500 for that weekend. So my aunt had paid it. Then they sell you the second program. Because at the end of the day, it's a business. It's a great business. Right. I love these type of businesses that give you value back. And I'm all for investing in them. Right. Because nothing in the world is free. Our water isn't even free. And they get it from like the rivers, yes, and whatever. So it costs again. There's always a price to pay. So then they sell you the second program. And the second program is like $700. I'm 20 years old. I don't got $700. I just asked my aunt to borrow $2,000. The reason I'm even in here. But I call her and I'm like, yeah, I want to go to the second program. Like, she's like, okay, I'll loan you that too. Don't worry about it.
Wow.
For the second program.
You know, it's, you got so much more than those $2,000 that you initially wanted. And to think about how much you were resisting in the beginning, right? And I think that is what happens to so many of us, right? That we resist what we don't know. We resist what we're not familiar with. But the minute that we surrender, the minute that we let go and we say, you know what? Let me just take this for what it's worth and what I can get out of it. Like that is when the real transformation starts to happen, right? So you got the $2,000, but that was nothing really to what you really gained from that experience.
Nothing. We rob ourselves of so much by resisting, like so much. We kind of put ourselves in this little box, like, I don't want to go to that place. I don't want to do that thing because we think we already know what's it going to be like. We think we're not going to like it. But what we don't know is who you're going to meet there or what's going to happen on your way there or what's going to happen when you come out of there. Like There's so many pieces to the puzzle that we rob ourselves from. Like, you can meet the love of your life on the train on your way to the club. Yep. You really don't know. And you're not going to meet him or her if you didn't leave your house. I've had so many instances where I'm at home, like, I really don't want to go to that event today. And then I end up going out of responsibility and I have the most wonderful time, or I make this really meaningful connection and it was so worth it. So I've started, I think in the last like 6 months, I've started to really train myself to just go. If you don't like it, then you leave, but just go. Like, you got to get there first. You can't say that you don't want to go before you even get there, because you don't know why this thing was put in your life.
Girl, yes. I love that. I love that.
You just got to go. And to close off on the how I started with the personal development. So that program, I kept doing all the programs they provided. It went from that $500 first program to a fourth program that cost me $7,000. So I invested about $10,000 in that company for my personal development. And that didn't give me a certificate to go and coach other people. It didn't give me a start your own business from here. It was all soul work for me, for my healing, for my growth, for changing my mentality. It didn't give me a trophy. It was all inner work. And because of that, I have a business today. I would not be the person I am today, capable of running a business to any extent, capable of standing in front of people and talking to them about who I am and where I come from and what I'm looking towards in my life, if I hadn't invested that money in me. And I really hate that people, not enough people, see the importance of investing in yourself without thinking that you're going to get a trophy back. Like,
well, the thing is, people invest, I feel, sometimes in the wrong things. They invest on, you know, things that make them look good on the outside. They want to have the tokens, the status tokens, right? They'll invest thousands of dollars, you know, on bags or shoes or clothing, like whatever, so that they could look good on the outside, but they're rotting on the inside, right? And so then they won't spend, you know, the $500 on a workshop, because it's like, no, there's nothing to show for it on the outside. Like, no one can see, oh, I just spent $500 on this. And so they hesitate.
The joke is that people are looking for trophies, like the car, the purse.
Yep.
They don't notice that they're the trophy. Like, you're the trophy. Everything else is an accessory.
Girl, yes.
And the more you invest in you, the trophy that you are, the more you're going to have access to all these accessories, the vacations, the luxury, the car. Like,
I love that analogy. Trophy versus, I'm writing that down, versus accessory. That's a post. That's something that you could write about, you know, so that people can start to recognize really what they're looking for. Like, they're looking so much to attract other people, but you don't want people, at least I don't want people to be attracted to what I have. I want them to be attracted to who I am. And, you know, I know that for me, I am consciously now practicing detachment from material things, because we live in a capitalist society. So everything that we see is marketed so that we can believe that we need that thing. And if we don't have it, we're nothing without it. So that requires like a reprogramming of our brains and unlearning of that. And so I've been mindfully practicing detachment so that I can recognize my value is not in what I have, but it's in who I am and in what I can give to others, you know. And like, you're already like on that path. You know, I've probably just started that within the past few years, and really Because when you have kids, they take all your damn money. So it's like, really, like, I don't have money to be spending frivolously just on material things. And then when I think about it, like, the more I work on myself, it's like, well, why do I feel that I need that? Like, what really is behind it? You know, so once you start becoming more aware of where your desire is coming from, it's easy to say, you know what, I don't need that, you know, and at this point, I can find better ways to invest my money.
100%. So I'm dating, and the man I'm dating for Valentine's, yeah, for Valentine's Day, he gives me a Louis Vuitton belt. So I'm not really into the big brands, but I just love the LV logo. Right. So my mom has gifted me a couple LV bags. I've never bought them because I'd rather spend $1,000 on a trip than on the bag.
Exactly.
But I'm happy to have the bags. And he's noticed that that's the one brand I have things of. So he gives me the belt. And I'm like, oh, thank you. It's so cute. And then he gives me some flowers. And I'm just like over the moon about the flowers. And he's like, yo, like, what? I'm like, oh, but these are me. Like, the flowers are me. I have a connection with the flowers. Like, they beautify my space. Like, they bring me that love. And I wish and I invite people to find things that really fill you up like that. Because chances are they don't cost all this money you're looking for, right? Chances are they're one of the most affordable things for you to get and fill you up with that. You don't have to bust your ass for $1,000 purse. Right. You might be able to go get a beautiful purse in the thrift store. They're like, oh my God, this purse is so beautiful. Like,
yeah,
I love with the feeling, not with the thing.
Yes.
Not with the thing, because you can get that feeling in other things and smaller things and moments and places. And like my favorite dates are when he agrees to walk around and for us to see things and spend that time together versus needing to go to an actual thing. Like, you know, so because of this society, capitalism, businesses, corporations, everything, We've been obsessed with things and not the moments that
I love that. So fall in love with the feeling, not the thing.
Yes.
That's so many mighty quotables. So good. Yes. And so one of the things I learned on my own journey is when we start healing, right? And we start setting boundaries and we stop allowing things that maybe we used to allow before we were healed. Sometimes we tend to lose people, right? Because the people around us don't want to accept those new boundaries. Did that happen with you?
Yeah. I've lost people in all different, like, I'll call them different types of loss, right? Like, some people I don't associate with at all anymore. I've had a couple old friends who were so obsessed with who I was that they couldn't see who I was becoming, right? So this girl with the nasty attitude, always talking back, they knew her so well and they didn't want to let her go that they weren't noticing the changes I was making. And every time I would try to come around them, it was always like a backlash on who I used to be. But no, because you used to be this way. So there comes a point where you got to close the door on that. Like, if you're not willing to look past who I was and I'm not being that person anymore, then I wish you well. I'm going to go my way. You go your way. Then there's a different type of loss where I'm just not into the same things that some of my old friends are into. So there's people now that I see like once a year when we get together for birthdays versus we used to hang out all the time or talk all the time. And it's life, you know. I think people come in your life for a reason, for a season. And all you could do is learn your best from your experience with them. wish them well. It hurts, you know. I've mourned people. I've mourned the relationships I've had with people. I still have times where I sit on my couch and I'm like, oh, remember that time with Fulanito or Fulanita? Wow, what a great time. Oh, I miss them. All right, you know.
Yeah.
Wish them well. Hope they're good. But I don't want to be there anymore.
Right.
I don't want to be in the space that I was when I was in a relationship with those people.
Right. Yes.
So that they don't want to be in the space that I'm in now. So there's no way of budging. The people that do find the way to budge, for example, my sister and I, she's my god sister, and we used to be together every day. Like from the fourth grade to high school, we were together every day, all the time. Fast forward, you know, we're 26 years old now. She likes to party a lot. I don't like to party. I have fun at a party.
Right.
But then I want to go home. Like I could party once every 3 weeks. Right. Every 2 weeks. You know, I could have an all night out fun thing. She likes to party all the time. I don't live that life anymore.
Right.
It doesn't mean I love her any less. It doesn't mean I think I'm better than her. It doesn't mean she thinks she's better than me or she's living life the right way and I'm living it the wrong way. We're just not interested in the same type of life. So we make time to have dinner together because I don't enjoy that party life and she enjoys dinner. So we find that balance. Where can we connect? If she takes her birthday very serious. So I know once a year, I'm willing to go party with her and her friends. Like for your birthday, I will party all day long. So it's just about finding what relationships can you find the middle ground in? Yeah. What can you do that isn't affecting you negatively? And then what relationships have come to their end? Like, you just got to accept that. Like, things end.
And that, and life doesn't stop, right? Because certain things end. You keep moving. But I love that you can recognize that. I think so many of us have to learn that lesson, that we don't have to stay stuck, you know, where we were, that it's okay for us to evolve past our old selves and recognize which relationships we want to keep and continue, and then recognize which relationships no longer serve us and be okay with letting those go, right? And for the people that want to be in your life, they will, you know, they will do what they need to find the middle ground. Right. So the fact that for your sister, a relationship with you also matters to her, you know, she's not trying to hold you to be something that you no longer are. She's letting you be who you are, but you find that middle ground where you two can still connect and be together. And girl, there's 40-year-olds that can't accept and understand that. So you're beyond.
Something I've really learned too during this growing journey of mine is that you're not responsible for fixing people's life. So the more I fall in love, or as I was falling in love with personal development and fixing my life, the more I wanted everyone around me to fix their life. Like, but how can you still want to be in that position? Like I have a way out.
Right.
Let me help you. And even that almost ruined a lot of my relationships because I wanted to be the fixer. I had the answers. I wanted you to be better. I wanted it more for them than people wanted it for themselves. And I have learned that when it's meant for them, you don't even got to show it to them. They're going to come ask for it. And the best thing you can do is live by example. And if it's meant for them, it will come. You know, don't force growth on people.
Yeah.
Invite them to grow.
Right. But
don't force them. Don't try to push them on the path. That was a big battle I had with my mom. Like, these programs that I told you I did. So I ended up doing 4 programs and I forced my mom to do 3 of these 4 programs. I think I helped her pay for them too. And if there were 10 things to learn in the program, my mom learned half of one. And we spent the same amount of money. We spent the same amount of time. I learned 11 out of 10, and she learned half of one out of 10 because she didn't want to be there.
Right.
She didn't want to be there.
Yeah.
No, it didn't make the program bad.
Right.
It wasn't for her. She did not want to be there. Now, when she was ready, she went and took a different program and she got all its value out because she actually wanted to be there. And she started making changes in her life. Now, what do I think got her there? Seeing the changes that I made in my life.
Right.
She made that decision to soak it all in. That's when it applied to her life, because she decided. It's like, how many kids sit in a classroom and one kid understands everything and five of the kids don't understand shit because they're not paying attention because they don't want to.
Right.
Don't try to feed people what you're on, because unless they're interested, it's not going to digest. And that's a very important thing to share with people on this growth journey, because you want everyone around you to be on the same thing.
Yeah.
You want to let go of these people you love to be around. You want growth for them. You want the best things for them, but you got to let them go after the things that they want. And again, find the middle ground if possible, or say your goodbyes, or love them from a distance. Or, you know, I have a lot of friends that I call and I check in on. Hey, how you doing? Love you. Okay. Take care. Let me know if you need anything. But a lot of these friends I don't hang out with anymore because there hasn't been a middle ground. Like, we don't enjoy the same
right
thing anymore. So there's really nothing to do. There's still love there. I still wish them the best, but.
So wise. Okay, so when you think about your life, what is the ultimate vision for you?
So I picture myself in a house somewhere up on a mountain with a lot of gardens and flowers and fruit and vegetables. And I see a water, like, I don't know, maybe a river or the beach somewhere nearby. Just enjoying nature, really. Like that's my goal, to enjoy nature. Have people come enjoy nature with me. I've never wanted kids. I love children. I've worked with children since I was 14 years old. Both like in family and like outside, being like a nanny and program coordinator and all these things. But I've never wanted my own kids. I've never wanted a wedding. I've never wanted to get married. It's so funny, like growing up.
Girl, that all might change because I didn't want any of those things either.
I'm open. I'm open to the fact that tomorrow I might want a whole football team of kids.
Yeah.
And a husband and the wedding and all that. But to be honest, up until these 26 years of life, it has never crossed my mind. Like, I have always seen myself traveling all over the world, getting to know the world and its people. Like that has just.
And that's a beautiful thing to want for yourself, you know, and that, and I'm happy that you don't feel the pressure that so many, I think, especially in the Latino culture, where everything is like family and everything is about, well, when are you getting married or when are you having kids, that you know what you want for your life, that it doesn't necessarily, that your happiness isn't going to be tied to whether you're married or not, to whether you have children, that, you know, if that happens for you, if it happens, when it happens, you're open to it, but like, that is not what is going to ultimately make you happy. That is so important.
I have a very strong sense of self, and that has developed through all my healing, all the work, all the investments, because I'm my mom's only child. So it's very difficult for her that I don't want to have children. Mm. Like she takes it. It's very hard on her. She's like, you're not going to continue my family. I'm like, Mom, if you wanted more chances, you should have had more kids. Mm. Like, that isn't on me. I was not born to please you or to continue your legacy, or I'm here to do things for me.
Yeah.
So again, I'm 26. I'm her only child. Every month we have this discussion of, when are you going to have kids? And I'm like, I'm not going to have kids. And at all the family parties is, when you're going to have kids? I'm like, but I'm not. Oh, yes, you are. I'm like, but I'm not. And if, you know, if I do, I always say I'm a very responsible adult. I do everything I can to not get pregnant because I do not want kids. But if over all of that, God finds that it's my time to get pregnant, then I'm going to have a kid because it was meant for me to have a kid. And I think I will be a great mom. But it's not in my plans. And I stand very firm on that. When my family brings it up, I don't get upset anymore. I used to get mad about it. Like, why are you still asking me the same shit? I already told you this. At this point, I'm so secure in what I want for my life, and that I'm doing it for me, not to please anybody, not to look good to anybody, that now they ask me and I'm just chilling. Like, we ain't gonna have kids. I'm not. For real, you don't want them? No. But why?
It's hard for people to understand that, like, not everybody wants kids. Like, I don't know why that's such a foreign concept.
First of all, the two favorite lines are, you're not a woman until you have kids, right? That's one. So then I always bring out, how about the women who can't have kids? Like, so,
right.
So like, no, because that was God. I'm like, oh, God told them, like, that was God that chose, you're not going to be a full woman because you're not going to have children. And then God chose these women. Okay, you do deserve to be a woman. Mm-hmm. And then bring up, like, how about all the mothers who have kids that they didn't want and then don't perform?
Right. And well, abandon those kids.
I'm like, what if that happens to me? Y'all over here forcing me. I mean, I know that's not going to be
right.
And I start bringing this to kind of open their eyes, that this whole fairy tale that you try to sell people about having kids is not for everybody, because it ain't no fairy tale. Having kids ain't no fairy tale. You have beautiful moments, you know, the more I speak with parents, when they come hug you and tell you they love you and want to cuddle you, and those are beautiful moments, but it's hard shit every day.
Yeah, you know, it is.
Showing up your best, not only for you anymore, for these kids.
Yeah.
It's making decisions, because there's no parenting book. It's making decisions of, fuck, if I put you in this school, how are you going to grow up? What are they going to teach you? Who are you going to socialize with? What's the environment going to be like? It's caring about literally another human, like, yeah, providing and protecting another human. So it's not such an easy decision to make. And I kind of bring this awareness to people, and they're like, but why you don't have kids? I'm like, well, but that's because it's not just having a kid.
Right. It's everything else.
Too many people are just having a kid. And what's the point of having a kid if you're not looking to provide them with the best possible environment for them to flourish?
Yeah.
You need to go give like a pre-parenting workshop or something, because people don't get it. They really, really don't. They think, you know, it's just about having the kid, and it's not. That's just the beginning. Because now once that kid is here, like, everything is dependent on the decisions that you make as a parent. And we know you either are going to lift your child up and they're going to grow into healthy humans, or you're going to fuck them up so bad that they're going to spend, you know, their 20s in therapy trying to heal from all of the toxic shit, yeah, that we as parents, you know, did to them. And that's one of my greatest fears, even as self-aware as I am. Like, I still ask myself, like, wow, in what ways am I messing up my kids? Like, you know, there's always going to be something. Like, I know I'm not making the same mistakes my mother made, but I'm sure I'm making some. There has to be something that, you know, 10 years from now, my daughter is going to say, well, you did this or you didn't do this. And here I am thinking, like, wow, I'm really trying my best, you know?
We will find something. We will find something that you should have done differently.
Yeah. It's like you said, there's no rule book. There's no parenting book. And so we're all just trying our best and then praying, like, you know, God, I hope that they turn out good, you know.
All where my intentions were with this.
Right, exactly. So before I let you go, one last question. When it's all said and done, how do you want to be remembered? What do you want your legacy to be?
I want my legacy to be about love. Just loving other people, loving yourself, loving the world. I think that when you really start to break down what love is, it's about respect, it's about sacrifice, it's about commitment. And that's what I look to embody in my life, is respecting myself, respecting other people, committing to myself, committing to my goals, just putting myself in alignment to live in love, not just with a person, but with my life. And that's what I share. And I want people to remember, like, wow, she really loved her life. She just loved. Like I ask myself this a lot, and I always come back to that word, like, love. I know that my purpose in life is to share love, but you really got to break down what is love. It's not just something you say, it's something you act based on. And how much do you love yourself, right? Like, I bring the analogy a lot about pizza, because I love pizza. But I have to love myself enough to know I can't eat pizza because it harms my body. Like, and it took me a lot of work to, example, not buy cheese. Like, I've been out of my mom's house for a year and I've never bought cheese from a house. Like,
wow.
I can't even believe that. Not that I don't eat cheese, you know, I if I go out and I order a dish and it has cheese, I still give myself permission for that, because I'm balancing out the work that I'm doing. But to commit to know that this can't come into my household was a very big act of love for myself. So I'm just looking to share that with the world, is to love yourself beyond the immediate satisfaction, and to focus on the bigger picture of your life.
Oh, that is a beautiful way to end this podcast. Love yourself beyond the immediate satisfaction. Powerful. Thank you, Mighty, for sitting with me. This has been such just a joyful conversation. And I got to learn so much more about you that I didn't know. So thank you for sharing space with me.
Thank you so much for having me, Nancy. I love you. It was an honor. It was a pleasure. I am always inspired by everything you create in your family, in your business, in your life for yourself. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Nancy Ruffin Show. I hope you enjoyed spending your time. Bye.